Our doctor is in, and so are the doctors of Capital Health. Welcome to the all-new Health 411. Every Sunday morning at 10, Dr. Jonathan Karp, along with our respected panel of guests from Capital Health, take you on an important medical journey to help you navigate your health and the healthcare system to reach your destination, good health. Health 411 is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.
107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com. Proudly nominated for National Association of Broadcasters 2019, 21, 22, and 2023 Marconi Award for Best College Radio Station, as well as a winner of the 2023 IBS College Media Award for universities under 10,000 students. We are broadcasting from the Bronx All Digital Studios on the campus of Rider University in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Welcome to Health 411. I am your host, Professor Jonathan Karp. This Health 411 program is presented by Capital Health. In Health 411, we discuss a variety of issues affecting health and wellness, public health, healthcare policy, and the science of health and healthcare. Our goal is to expand your knowledge and your perspective. Today, Dan Geller, our student producer, and I are recording with our guest, Daniel Todd. Daniel is the CEO of Influence Media, and we are going to hear more about that. And we welcome you to listen in on our conversation talking about the psychology of remote work. Welcome to Health 411, Daniel.
Hey, thanks, Jonathan and Dan. Good to chat with you. Company's name, Influence Mobile, though. You said Influence.
Oh, Media. Well, I 100% apologize for that. I made some bad.
No problem.
And so I obviously I'm not unfamiliar with your company. There's no better way with segue to say that. Can you tell us two things I'm going to ask you and ask you to take it? First, I'm going to ask you about your background and how did your background, because we might have students who might be listening. How did your background lead you to become the founder and CEO of Influence Mobile?
Sure. So actually, while I was in college in the 90s, computers were just kind of moving into the internet stage, and I got involved in a certification program called Microsoft Certified Software Engineer, and a buddy of mine was starting a company that needed a software engineer, and so we connected, and in late 1999, right before the internet bubble burst in the V1 of the internet, we started a company, and we weren't smart enough to go home, and so we actually lived to tell about it, lived through 9/11. And then we built a company that did about $80 million a year in revenue, had about 300 employees, and we made a lot of mistakes, got a few things right. And so I ended up leaving that company in 2007. And a few years later, I really wanted to take all of the learnings that I had, both from like operationally, how you just grow a business with the people side, and then ideas I had from the business side, combine them together. So in 2012, I started what was at the time called Affinity Influencing Systems, to build a company that used technology to influence people's future shopping based on their affinities. And we, as we moved into mobile, we kind of changed the name to Influence Mobile. And that's what we'll be talking about a little bit more today.
Okay. And so when you say to influence people's online behavior, is that in terms of getting them to buy things, to sell things, or all of the above?
Mainly to buy things. So the initial versions of our product were celebrity shopping rewards programs. So people like Jillian Michaels and Jeff Gordon and Ashley Tisdale, people kind of when Facebook first took off in 2012, 2013, these companies didn't have good ways to, the people didn't have good ways to monetize their presence. Some of them had 10 million followers on Facebook. And so we would create like the Jillian Michaels shopping rewards program, and she'd post on her Facebook and say, hey, get a chance to meet me or work out with me or whatever was motivating to her fans. And then some of her brand sponsors would give rewards, and we would kind of facilitate all that. So people would download this toolbar. The toolbar would have the little icons of Jillian Michaels' face on various websites that were our partners. If they did Google searches or they went to different places, we would indicate to them where they could shop for points. When they shopped, they got the points, which made them happy because they could enter. We made some money. We shared that with Jillian Michaels, and everybody was kind of happy.
Oh, really good. So the fact that she's sort of in the fitness world was not your passion. She was just a celebrity promoting something, and that was sort of your business model. Is that correct?
She would just happen to be in fitness. Yeah, we work with rappers. We work with people I'd never even heard of. And I'm like, how does this person have 12 million followers? But Jillian had the best crossover with ultimately the business model we had, which is tends to be females over the age of 35. They have a very large share of wallet. And so that was one of the more successful programs. But as that sort of matured and Facebook moved from this desktop-centric experience to a mobile experience, we actually had a partner, Lindsay Lohan, and she posted about her program.
The actress.
Yeah, the actress. She posted, and 9,000 people in 5 minutes came to download a product that was for the desktop, and they were all on their mobile phones. And we didn't have a mobile phone app, and we're like, well, we better work on that. So we just figured we would just build a mobile version of what we had done on the desktop side. And the short story of that was a failure. People just weren't shopping on their mobile phones quite as much as they do today. And so we actually met with Facebook at the time I lived in Seattle, Facebook had an office there. We went and met with Facebook, and they were launching a product called Facebook Audience Network, where you could take Facebook ads and put them into your apps. And so I started telling all of the celebrities, like, hey, good news, I got another way for us to make money. We're going to show ads. And they all hated the idea. They're like, who's going to go first? And I'm like, well, of course you are, right? And none of them wanted to go first. And so we ended up launching around a brand that we made up called Louder Rewards, which at the time, Russell Wilson of the Seattle Seahawks had just came, and we knew a lot of connections to the Seahawks, and there's a lot of female football fans. So we launched this opportunity for people to try new things and earn Seahawks gear. And very quickly, that was making us more money. Just that one app called Louder Rewards was making us more money than a dozen celebrity programs.
Wow.
And this was end of 2014, 2015. And so we very quickly sort of pivoted the business into sports. We launched hundreds of apps, and we basically invited people to come and earn, you know, whatever they wanted, hoodies and shoes and socks and really anything they wanted by trying new things. And those things were typically mobile apps. And so they'd click on ads from Facebook, and Facebook would pay us. And we, within less than 12 months, we scaled up to $3 million a month in revenue with the Facebook partnership. We were spending $1 million a month on Facebook ads. Facebook was very happy they were coming and taking us to lunch. And
wow,
everything
cool.
Everything seemed amazing, but I knew there was a problem because we didn't actually know what people were doing. Like, we were giving them points for trying new things. And I kept telling Facebook, I'm like, hey, you actually know what they just did. You know that they installed the game or they visited a shopping site. I'm like, imagine if you just sent me that data and I could give people ongoing rewards for those behaviors. And they didn't want to have any part of it. And so we started building a product called Engage, which would allow us to work directly with app developers. And this year we're going to do just shy of $70 million in revenue with that Engage project product. And so the good news was we started building Engage. The bad news was a few months later, Facebook's like, well, we're going to change the way we're doing this thing. We don't know when we're going to turn you off, but we don't mind what you're doing, but we don't think it's scalable for the whole world. So it's going to go away. And sure enough, January 2016, they cut us off. We went from, you know, $3.5 million a month in revenue to 700,000. I had to cut the company in half. And then I should have probably cut the company by 90%. And then it took several years of limping along to actually kind of survive and build up the advertiser base to get revenues back up to some meaningful level.
Wow. Wow, this is not a business. That sounds like a cool business story, but this program is not about the business of what you do. You came in because what you wanted to do, and I can see the connection now. Like I said, I'm unfortunately not familiar with Influence Mobile. Now I guess I sort of am, about the psychology of remote work. And I can see, and we're going to continue this discussion after we take a break for some underwriting announcements, how the use of your technology and points would fit sort of nicely in remote work and people who are not having to go to work, face-to-face work, but are interfacing with computers and their cell phones daily for hours and hours and hours on end. And we're going to transition to that after these underwriting announcements. We'll be right back. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant, that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell, to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties, to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit.
Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. We're recording Health 411 from the Digital Bronx Studios. Welcome back. We are continuing our conversation with Daniel Todd, the CEO and founder of Influence Mobile. And what we learned in the last segment was sort of the background of the company and how Daniel has built a company out of working with people who were in front of their computers and their cell phones for long periods of time, day in and day out. It's interesting. You said a couple times that women, and you actually one time you mentioned of a age demographic, 35 and above. But I'm imagining in today's world where so many people are working from home a lot, and that's the remote work, that the people who are using your app and your programs are more diverse than just women.
For sure. Yeah. So it's really adult. We target our product to all adults. So, you know, our clients are the largest game developers in the world, and they want people that have credit cards that can spend money in their games. We don't get people under the age of 18. But yeah, it's 60% female, 40% male. We have people from, you know, 18 to in the early 90s. So it's quite a range.
And so one of the interest is, and so how did you transition from just looking at like who the users are and what they're using it for to be interested in sort of what's called the psychology of remote work? Because when people are working at home, they're obviously, you're telling us, not glued to whatever programs they need for work, the day-to-day jobs. They're doing other things like intermittently between that. Am I correct in that assumption?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, the people that are playing games are certainly, you know, all kinds of different places. When I think of the psychology of remote work, I think of it more in line with our employees, right? And we mm-hmm. have about 75 employees. And in that story that I told you, we had gone up pretty big and then shrunk. And we had been a remote first company even kind of during those early years. But as we started to grow based on this business model, we started hiring people all over the world, and that was a benefit, right? So remote work offers a big benefit to people. They don't have to commute. They don't have to, they can live wherever they want. They can live in a lower cost state. Mm-hmm. But there's also challenges. You don't get to see people face to face like you and Dan get to right now. Mm-hmm. I oftentimes only see some of my employees for a few hours a year. You know, when I think about what, and I'm spending a lot of time in the last year thinking about this very question, is how do you make remote work as rewarding and beneficial as possible, giving people the opportunity to stay at home, but minimize the negative aspects that could come from isolation or, you know.
Well, there's a lot laid in. So I'm going to inject in here because it seems like you'd be a great person to ask this question. In my day, people used to talk about in the business world the cultures of different companies, you know, they had a statement of how they wanted to treat people. In the world of remote work, like, how do you build a corporate culture when people are only seeing each other maybe on a Zoom very infrequently kind of stuff? Is that an antiquated term, corporate culture?
Not at all. No. So we've won many years in a row best places to work despite being remote. We put a lot, I'd spend as much time thinking about developing a healthy company culture as I do actually running the business, right? Like the business aspects of what product we're going to build and how many salespeople we need. And so I would say the way that we have done it is based on relationships, which, you know, some of those predated this company, right? So I have people that I work with that I've known for 20 or 30 years. We oftentimes, when we hire a great employee, they usually like working here so much that they'll refer a few friends. And so I'd say something like 20 to 30% of our employees are probably directly related. Well, a lot of them are related to me. My wife works here and my sister-in-law and my daughter. Cool. But we have a lot.
You're a benevolent despot. I'm teasing. But so let me, I'm an academic. And so one of my unproven or hypotheses is that what happened when COVID forced everybody to go remote, a lot of companies kept going and maintained their efficiency or kept going because people had relationships from being in the office together. They knew each other. And so companies were able to keep going because these relationships had years and years and years to develop. Though I think there could be, and you can tell me if I'm wrong with this because you're like doing it, is as those employees who work together now all become remote, a lot of those relationships are going to go away. People are going to change companies. New people are going to come into companies, younger people who haven't spent all those years working together in an office engaging. Is that a thing that people, I use the business language, in your space in the remote world are thinking about, or what's going to happen in terms of corporate cultures, in terms of productivity and that kind of stuff? Or is my idea completely ridiculous?
No, I don't. I think, you know, well, if you're familiar with the term, the Great Resignation, that happened sort of as COVID loosened, companies lost massive amounts. Like people were a little scared. They didn't want to leave during COVID. And then once that happened, you know, a typical company might see 25% churn per year of all their employees. The way I deal with it, so we actually haven't had a person quit our company willfully since 2018.
Wow.
So nobody has quit, and we've grown from 7 to 70 employees. So it's not the biggest company in the world, but it does come down to those relationships. And I think what you're getting to is like there has to be a way to build relationships in a remote work environment that is at least as equivalently valuable as what we used to do in the real world.
That would be the hope, yes.
And I believe it can happen. So we bought a company about 3 years ago. They were in Montreal, Canada. It was about 25 employees. And I built 98% of the relationship I built with the founder. His name's Randy. He's the president of our company now. Was built through Zoom. We met one time in 2018. I proposed a business relationship when we were both doing about $30,000 a month in revenue together, and they were keeping 10,000 and we were keeping 20,000. I said, hey, if we do all these different things and you trust me here, we can do a lot more money together and we could eventually merge. And 2 years later, we acquired them when we were doing $4 million a month in revenue together. And all of that was done and the relationship was built over Zoom. My kids and my wife would joke that I talked more with Randy on Zoom than anything else. And so I think the important part is that there's needs to be a purposeful focus. And so most of the time with Zoom, you just get on, you have your conversation like we're having right now, and then you get done and you're over and we say goodbye. And so if I was there in person, for example, I might invite you and Dan out for coffee when we're done and we'd get to know each other a little bit more. That doesn't exist in the Zoom world. And so that has to be, you have to compensate for that. Mm-hmm. And so we do compensate for that with a lot of different things that we can talk about. But it doesn't just happen accidentally. It has to be done purposefully. Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is you are confident that relationships in the business world can continue to be formed. They're just going to be a little bit different, right? You're not going to eat lunch together or go out for a beer after work together because that just can't happen. But you can build productive relationships in different ways.
For sure. Well, I think it's a requirement that there are still in-person activities. So for example, last month we took probably a third of our company to San Diego. It was all of our devs and our product team and then a leadership group. And we spent several days together. And anytime we get together in real life, at least 50% of the purpose is for relationship building. So we rented a yacht one night and had dinner and beautiful thing. We took everybody to the San Diego Zoo. So a lot of time, and it was a combination of both unstructured time where people could just hang out and chat. There was some structured time so we could be more purposeful about connecting people who might not normally work together on a regular basis. And then, you know, we're constantly trying to reassess. Like you said, we can't get together every Friday, which is what we used to do in real life, but we can get together frequently enough that the relationships can build. And then the feedback I got from everybody was, after having this time kind of separate from people, they so cherished that time that actually deepened the relationships when they went back on Zoom, and people just felt closer than ever to the people they're working with. And then we're only a few months away. We bring everybody in the company to Vegas in January, February time period. And then we're just kind of on this cadence where we try to get everybody together in some capacity, either the whole company or just their team, twice a year. And that seems to be at least laying a good foundation for allowing those relationships to blossom.
Cool. And I want to hear more about that. I can see your interest in the psychology of remote work, but we're going to take a break for some brief underwriting announcements here on Health 411. 411, you are listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7 The Bronx Doc.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. Welcome back to Health 411. We're continuing our conversation with Daniel Todd, CEO and founder of Influence Mobile. And we're talking about the psychology of remote work and building relationships in the business space. And Influence Mobile is obviously a company that works creating apps and programs for online use. But Daniel and his company is meeting some of the challenges associated with remote work by having the people actually gather together. And is that what you call a hybrid work environment in that? Or is it not quite hybrid because you're not really working together? You're gathering for social/work functions occasionally.
Yeah. I would say the traditional, we have both. I would say that the traditional definition of hybrid is a person who goes into the office at least once a week or, you know, on a regular cadence and actually works in a consistent thing as opposed to like what we're doing. But we have a hub of employees in Seattle, Washington. We have about 15 to 20 employees and we have a small office there. People do not go in very often, but they do go in. And then we have a bigger office, the company I mentioned that we merged with in Montreal, they have an office. And so the people who do want to, you know, some are not anywhere close to coworkers, but the people who are in those hubs have the opportunity to connect with people and they'll go to lunch maybe once a month or something like that. So there are some people who work the hybrid and like it. And then there are people like, well, I was going to say like me, I live in Sedona, but we actually have 4 employees here in Sedona. So I actually see coworkers. But there are people like, again, all over the country. And so we're very sensitive to make sure that we understand. So the other part of this is apart from just facilitating those meaningful kind of face-to-face relationships, we do a lot of communication, more, I think, communication in a remote environment by far than I ever did when I was working face-to-face to people. So one of the reasons I do podcasts, one of the reasons I write articles for Inc. and Entrepreneur is so that people can kind of see me talking about what's important from a company perspective. I send a lot of communication to the employees about the progress of our company. We have regular company meetings. Employees have regular meetings with their managers. I used to try to meet with everybody when we were smaller, and now we have an HR team that meets with everybody. If you're new, they get you, you. They meet with you once a month, every month for your first year, and then it goes to every other month. And then we also facilitate social events. We'll get together and play a game of werewolf, or you know, we just did a Halloween murder mystery. And then the other thing that I find valuable is I kind of create business working groups. So something that creates some value for the company that's not necessarily normally part of people's duties. And I connect people that don't see each other from day to day. And so what that means for us right now is its groups are called Socius, and it connects five people who don't work together, and they plan birthdays for 1 month for all the other employees. And
so So what you're working on, it seems like a large part of your effort is looking for ways to communicate, not just about work-related things, but about life things. So communication is key, and it's not just work. You want to know people's birthdays. You want to know their sense of humor, things that you would pick up in other ways if you're working face to face. It seems like you are endeavoring to create opportunities for people to share those experiences with each other. And for the radio audience, Daniel is nodding as I'm trying to summarize some of these things. I want to ask you another question, because you mentioned that a portion of your company is based in Montreal. And so I have a question. Are there differences in the approach to remote work in the United States and Canada?
I mean, not massively. There are different cultures. Like the company that they had was a little different than ours. And so, but as we've worked together longer, there becomes more alignment. But I wouldn't say that there's fundamentally a difference. I mean, if we hire somebody in Toronto or Vancouver, they're pretty much acting and responding the same way as the people who live in Lafayette, you know, or Austin.
So people are people. The boundaries of U.S. versus Canada is not really making a difference in what you're finding for what you're asking them to do.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about culture, right? I spent a lot of time reading and talking about this topic. To me, it means hiring people that have a growth mindset, that want to work together as a team. And so a big part of what works for us in the relationship building is that focus. So I do most of the first interviews for all the employees, because I want to make sure that we bring in people that have this growth mindset. And when you have these people who value relationships, they value teamwork, they're not just trying to be the smartest person and take credit for everything so they can move on to the next career, you really create this team dynamic that's very powerful. And a lot of people, like people who are new to working, you know, work less than 10 years, they say this is the best place they've ever worked. People who are older, who are nearing retirement, say they don't ever want to leave. They want to only work here till they retire. And so those are positive signs to me that we're doing the right thing. And so, but it's not just me doing it, right? At the scale that we're at now, all the managers make a difference. Each employee makes a difference. We use a product called Hey Taco, which is this fun thing we use with Slack that lets people give remote recognition. So let's say Dan did a great job.
You send him a taco, an electronic taco.
You did send him a digital taco with a little thing.
It accrues
like a currency, and then people can earn swag. So like people could get this Influence Mobile jacket or shirts or fun taco kind of things with their tacos, right? And then, but we don't even show people who gets the most tacos. The actual leaderboard in the company is who's sharing the most tacos, who's appreciating their coworkers. And so every day I can go through and I can see dozens and dozens of interactions from remote work, remote employees in all kinds of different states, thankful for the contribution that somebody else in a different state made to them. And so it gives me a level of insight of what's happening that just makes me very, very happy to see. And so, you know, I would say that's another very big important thing, because it kind of eliminates, or at least minimizes, the sort of dancing with wolves, you know, people feeling totally isolated and alone. Mm-hmm. They can see that people care and appreciate their contributions. And
so it's maintaining, I can see it's the maintaining the motivation to keep going, even if the motivation is not just financial and it's not just about go, go, go and whatever tasks you give people. it's sort of a looser, lighter smile, you know, competing over, you know, a taco kinds of thing.
Yeah. It's not even competing. Like what I want people,
numbers of
what we try to focus on is I want people, I truly believe there's this like symbiosis between employers and employees where I literally care about the success of each employee. Mm-hmm. I want them to be better, not just for the sole purpose of making the company better, but ultimately so they can go on and be successful wherever they're at. And the kind of quid pro quo of that is I want them to get better by investing time in completing the goals and the tasks that I've, you know, assigned to them or their team has assigned to them. And so, and then when they do that, it creates more value for the company. We make more money and then we can share that money with them. So it creates this very positive virtuous circle that continues to grow. And when people see that working, it becomes very contagious. New people come in and they immediately want to get on board with that because they see that it's not just us saying a bunch of things, because nobody says they want to have a bad culture. Everybody right. says they mm-hmm. want a good culture, but lots of people don't back it up with actual wow. actions. And so once you see it, you know, a purposeful company trying to do all the right things, and if you can get the right kind of people who value that, then it can make a magical place.
Yeah, and I'm impressed and I applaud you for your efforts to be thinking about those things at the highest levels. You obviously have not farmed it out to a subordinate, you know, a culture czar or something like that to do it. You're nodding. And I want to come back and I want to follow up on some of the things you said about this employee culture, because I'm fascinated by some of the things you're talking. But we're going to take a break for some underwriting announcements here on Health 411. You are listening to 107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronc is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advanced
Medicine. 107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com. You're listening to Health 411. I'm Professor Jonathan Karp, and I'm having a conversation with Daniel Todd, CEO and founder of Influence Mobile. And Daniel is telling us about, even in a work environment, how he works very hard to create culture in the company, to make people motivated. And he was talking about hiring and bringing in the right kind of people. I have a question that has a little bit of a personal aspect to it. I have a daughter who's married and has a son-in-law who is in the tech world. He's in the computer programming kind of world. When we talk about jobs, he's had a couple of them, and he talks about, oh, I'm going to go work here for a little bit, and then I'm going to use this tech job as a scaffolding to a step, to the next step. Does that... And he says, in my world, if I'm in the job for more than 5 years, people start to look and say, oh, what's wrong? How come you're not stepping up, moving on? Is that something you are encountering now, like with the younger people, like, you know, Dan's age, who are think that, you know, they have to keep always, you know, making more money, blah, 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 blah. But you're creating a culture. You have employees who stay for long periods of time. Is this something that you think about or have to deal with as the younger people are coming in?
I certainly think about it, and it's unfortunate that oftentimes what your son-in-law mentioned is true, is that people increase in value, but they're not recognized for that increase in value. And so for them to get more money, they have to go someplace else. And I think that's just a sad side of bureaucracy, right? It's like companies get so big that they can't really see the direct tangible value of each individual person. And so they kind of get stuck on annual reviews and annual raises. And that's, you know, by and large, that's what we do. But what we, as I mentioned, what we try to really underscore to people is We are here for people who want to get paid fair value. We typically try to aim to be in the 80th percentile of salary. So we want people who are qualified, of course, to get paid in the 80th percentile of salary for their range. And we want it, and we give them clear expectations of where they can be, or where they want to be a year from now. If they want to make, you know, 20,000 more, we set the expectations for that. And so far, whether they're young or old, or experienced or inexperienced, that is working for us. As I mentioned, we're going to go on almost 7 years without somebody willingly leaving our company. That's going to break at some point in time. But the other thing that I do is I probably as much value as I place on any other thing. You mentioned about job frequency. Is I look for people who've worked at a bunch of different places for less than 2 years. So the opposite thing also applies. If you're jumping from job to job, I will not even interview. I don't care how experienced you are. I don't care how awesome you are. I look for people who have at least a minimum stint of 3 to 4 years. And I'm looking kind of more at their average stints. And if they're not committing to places for 3 to 5 years, they're not the right fit for us. I think the strategy that you mentioned, where people go from big company and build a resume, that's a strategy that's worked for many people. But a lot of the older, more experienced people here, they're like, you pay a price. You pay a price. Some of those companies that are paying the very top dollar are doing so because that's the only way they can attract people to stay there. And I want to name some of the biggest companies in the world, but I know lots of friends in Seattle that work at some of the biggest tech companies, and some of them are happy, but many of them hate it. Many of them put in their time there for 2 or 3 years and they get out. And so I think as people get more and more experienced, they understand that the mental health, we talk about mental health and remote work, like the mental aspects of working at a place with a bad culture cannot be made up for long term with money.
So how long, like, somebody who thinks about the corporate culture and building it, how long do you think it takes people to learn your culture or come into Influence Mobile and get it? Because they come from lots of different places. How long does it take for the, I don't even know if it's a conversion or it's part of the hiring process looking for people who already buy in?
I think it's for sure the hiring process is a big part of it, right? Like it's the number one thing. That's why I do all the first interviews. I'm not assessing someone's technical ability to write, you know, Go language or Ruby or how good of a salesperson they are. I'm wanting to know about their background, what motivates them. But there are people who come in with, you know, what you might call historical workplace trauma, that they just don't believe. Mm-hmm. They don't believe when we say we care about them. They don't trust that. And that can take time. That can certainly take a few months. I think, you know, there are people who come in who just came from big companies and they're used to acting a little bit more like a bull in a china shop. But those people stand out so quickly from everybody else. We don't punish them. We just simply say, like, that's not the way we work here. We treat everybody with respect. We do those type of things. So usually I'd say within a month or two.
Oh, wow. That's pretty quick. So the re-education is pretty quick for the right people. Right. And so it looks like, for your company to have success, and I'm impressed by this, it's part of it is, and we're not talking at all about the technology, the programming, the sales of your product. The emphasis of your success is treating people well. I mean, I hate to use this word, creating a work family kind of thing, because that sounds very old. But it's not every man or woman for themselves.
Yeah, and that actually is the answer to, you know, for me, it's the answer to how do you solve workplace psychological issues, right? You give people the support they feel like they know that there are people who care for them. They care for their coworkers. Like, it's a lot of moving pieces, as you mentioned. Like, because I think all the stuff we're talking about here applies equally as to whether or not you're building, you know, mobile apps, or whether you're building, you know, software as a service, or really any other thing that can be done remotely. Having this culture and treating people respectfully is the way to help them thrive in a remote work environment. And again, it's a two-way street. They have to do some parts. Employees need to have expectations. You need to facilitate them being able to get into deep work and some aspects of that. So there's some training things you want to make sure that you're doing as well. But as long as there's this balance of the employer's doing a lot to make them happy, then it's reasonable for the employer to ask for the employee to do their fair share. And when that doesn't happen on both sides, someone's going to leave. Right. Willingly or unwillingly.
Do you think, and I sort of, I can, I'm going to guess what you're going to say to this question. Do you think when you're creating this culture that when you and the people in your company go out and to market your products, do you think there's carryover? Do you think the people, your, I guess, clients or customers get what you're doing and it creates some, like a feeling that they can, these are people I can work with?
I think it does somewhat. So we have a group of players that use our app that we call Elite Rewards Group, but we actually have one-on-one communications. We have team members who talk to them. I think for sure they can sense something different. You know, some of these big game companies have 5,000 employees and they have an account manager who just cares about 7-day ROAS, this metric. And I don't know that they see it. I do know that relationships that myself and Randy and our leaders have built with other significant leaders at games companies, they know there's something different. We have a high degree of trust. Like we were recently ranked the best in the world at these couple of things that matter to our clients. And we were ranked up there with Google, Facebook, Snap, and Influence Mobile. Right. And so I think, and I'd like to believe a big part of that is because of the culture and those types of things. So we are being recognized for the quality of the product that we roll out. And I would say a big part of the success of that product rollout is the culture.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So if somebody wanted to find you or learn more about Influence Mobile, is there a URL or a phone number that you want to direct people to who might be listening and say, I want to look this company up and learn more?
Well, they can come to our website, influencemobile.com, or they can find me on LinkedIn. It's where I do all of my social media stuff. So just look for Daniel Todd. I live in Sedona, Arizona, CEO of Influence Mobile. They find me and happy to chat.
Wow. And you're very, I mentioned when I first met you, you're very lucky that you live in Sedona. It's a beautiful place. And I've been there several times on the tourist side. And that could be a whole other conversation. So Daniel, thank you so much for joining us in this conversation. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. This is 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. We're recording live from the Digital Bronx Studios. This program is Health 411 and it's part of Capital Health and Rider University efforts to bring people together to address issues associated with all aspects of health and healthcare, including remote work. I'd like to thank again Daniel Todd, CEO and founder of Influence Mobile. We hope today's conversation has given you some things to think about the psychology of remote work. If you have questions and or comments about this program or to make suggestions for future broadcasts, please email us at health411@rider.edu.
Remember, you have a doctor's appointment scheduled for every Sunday at 10 a.m. Don't miss the all-new Health 411 with Dr. Jonathan Karp and our expert medical guest from Capital Health. You can listen to Health 411 anytime on demand. Go to 1077thebronx.com/health411 to listen to past episodes or tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. to hear the weekend rewind edition of Health 411. Health 411 on 1077 The Bronx. Is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.